So I'm sitting down here with Roger Abbott, the Reverend Doctor, Professor, whatever you want to call him. He's all the way from the United Kingdom, where he works with the Faraday Institute based at Cambridge University. And these guys travel the whole globe doing various things, mostly on science and religion. But Roger, you do something unique in terms of natural disasters. So maybe you can just share a little bit of the work that you specifically do with the Faraday Institute.
Sure. My particular speciality is, as you say, researching so-called natural disasters. And what that means is that I go into areas where catastrophic events have taken place involving natural hazards. And I interview people. I do ethnographic work, so it means interviewing people and capturing their stories, their narratives of survival. And what is of particular interest to me is exploring how their religious beliefs help or hinder, in fact, their capacity to understand the events that are happening to them, they're going through, how they recover from them, and also, and equally importantly, how their beliefs help them mitigate future hazardous events turning disastrous.
Okay. So you worked at Hurricane Katrina, or what the effects of Hurricane Katrina. You were in Haiti after the earthquake. So you've been to some of these big natural disaster areas, but we are facing something now. I mean, we're recording this at the beginning of 2020, in March, I think it is, and the coronavirus pandemic is just now spreading. Even if we're not quite sure about the numbers and how devastating it is, the response is quite devastating in terms of government shutting down.
Absolutely.
You are supposed to fly home tonight back to the UK. Let's hope that can still happen, just given some might say overreaction, but definitely a very decisive action on the part of government and the flight industry, etc. Mm. And many people are worried and concerned about the coronavirus on many levels. And the church is in a unique position, I think, to try and address what's going on at the moment. Now, this is a different type of disaster that you are typically used to. But I'm sure that there's still a lot of insight that you can give us in terms of how to relate to this kind of disaster, given what you've learned in Haiti and the Southeast Asia as well after that tsunami.
Yeah. I think, for instance, when I was in Haiti, I arrived in Haiti 10 months after the earthquake, but they had a cholera epidemic that was introduced to the country in the October of 2010, and I arrived in November, when cholera was at its worst. And because cholera had never been in Haiti before, as an earthquake hadn't happened for many centuries, people just didn't know what was happening. And again, there was a huge fear in the population. And fear, of course, breeds fear. And it's interesting that being here now, coming from the United Kingdom, where the virus was as I left, and then it seemed to arrive in South Africa, coincidentally with our arrival. But nevertheless, one perceives the same levels of fear, and I think a lot of that is due to the uncertainty of the virus. It's a virus that is, on the one hand, they are saying many people will just have, some will have no symptoms, some will have very mild, cold-like, influenza-like symptoms, but it can kill. And that's the rub, I think, and it's in that sense, one is not entirely sure who it will just affect in what sort of way. And that effect, and because it's now a pandemic, it has spread so rapidly globally. And I think that means, in conjunction with governments now trying to contain it under the instructions of the World Health Organization and so on. And this has led, I think, to a measure of government control, if you like, of population. And the politics of it also creates fear. You'll now get conspiracy theories and all sorts of things going on. So fear is escalating. And so it's breeding fear in the economic community, the political community, the commercial community, and so on. And people's jobs are at stake. So there's a big ripple effect, if you like, mm-hmm. from the basic virus itself. And I think the church, yes, I think the Christian church has a responsibility. I was reading only this morning, and someone's harking back, actually, and I've read such records myself, back to the 17th century when the plague, mm-hmm. you know, struck the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And the way that a certain number of pastors or church leaders fled the cities because they're afraid of dying from this thing. Others actually took it upon themselves to stay. They felt they were called of God to be pastors to their people, shepherds to their people. So they stayed, and a number of them died because they stayed,
mm-hmm.
but they did so because they felt that was their calling. And it would be interesting to see if this virus develops as some think it will. Who will take it upon themselves to leave the vulnerable, and who will feel the call of God to stay and care for the vulnerable?
Mm.
I think there's also a duty, of how the church conducts itself, particularly in this atmosphere of fear and paranoia, and what we're seeing in the supermarkets, for instance, this mass bulk mm-hmm. buying. I think there is a challenge to the Christian church now to behave responsibly, to behave selflessly, actually, in terms of ensuring that the needs of those who are particularly those who are disenfranchised, whether it be the elderly, the infirm, or the very poor, that we are seen to be a giving community,
mm-hmm.
A community that is prepared to put others before themselves in the spirit of Philippians 2, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. And I hope that this will be the opportunity for the Christian church and for Christian people to show that deferential spirit, in stark contrast to what one fears may be the controlling mood and attitude of people, and that is, I've got to look after myself first.
Yeah, it's interesting, Rodney Stark, I'm not sure if you've read his work. He's a sociologist who did some work on the early Christian church, and he actually said that one of the reasons why the church grew so quickly in the beginning was precisely because when the Roman elite fled from the mm-hmm. cities when plague struck, the Christians would go in, and a number of things happened. On the one hand, these people would take care of these people, and if they recovered, then they felt more persuaded to go to the Christian to live the Christian life, but also it bolstered their immune systems,
mm-hmm.
so their immune systems actually got stronger. So the Christians in the early church, now, I mean, this is Rodney Stark's claim, I think it's quite feasible, but his claim is that the Christians then developed a very strong immune system, so they were just right. physically stronger than other people. So maybe that is a tradition, a part of the Christian story that we need to hark back and embrace again in this new time.
I think, yeah, I'm all for harking back to the spirit of deference and, as I say, pastoral care. If the spin-off comes that one's immune system gets stronger, well, That's just a spin-off, but I don't think that's a reason.
Exactly. I think that was. Remember, he's just looking at it as a sociologist and trying to make sense of the data. He's not even trying to say that this is what's going to happen to you. So, it's probably the opposite of the prosperity gospel. I mean, you can expect that if you go into horrible situations, that bad things are going to happen. But the reality is that this is not the Ebola virus yet. This is not cholera yet, where you've got these mavericks on the front line going there. For the moment, this is reaching everybody, and the way in which we deal with this is maybe on a very middle class, mundane level, but there are still opportunities for us to follow Jesus in a unique way, and that is maybe to not spend selfishly, as you said, absolutely, in the supermarket.
Yeah.
The other thing that I've been thinking about is that, I mean, economically everybody's going to be touched, but are we still going to give? Are we still going to give to the church? Are we still going to give to the poor? Are we now going to tighten our belts, and that's the first thing that we're going to cut?
Yeah.
I think that temptation is going to be there, and undoubtedly will be seen. Are we still going to try and pay just wages? Or are we going to tell people, look, you can work here, but only for this?
Well, the beauty, if one can use that term, the beauty of the situation is that we're all in the same boat as far as the virus and our vulnerability to that is concerned. And the economic impact is going to hit everyone. So there should not be any excuse for any demographic level of people feeling that they're likely to be more exposed than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So, I go back again to this spirit of deference, which actually, from a Christian point of view, is rooted in the very Trinity itself. The members of the Trinity deferring to each other. Perichoresis, the Orthodox Church calls it.
Maybe just expand on that a bit.
Perichoresis is really the doctrine of the three persons of the Trinity being co-eternal, co-equal, but each actually deferring to the other, rather than a hierarchy. You've got a deference of the Father to the Son to the Spirit, and each to the other.
Mm.
And I think we see that in Philippians 2, Christ did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, to be held on to, but emptied himself. It's profoundly humbling, isn't it, that our Creator God is a God of deference, a God who humbles himself. And I think that to me is a very, very powerful and very, very humbling and challenging theological concept for me to follow in my relationship with my fellow neighbors and human beings.
And it's easy, well, not easy, I mean, it's always difficult to try and emulate this perichoresis, this dance of God where you are, constantly giving away, counting others above yourself.
Yeah.
But when the going gets tough, it gets even more tricky to do that. So it's nice in the regular set of affairs, when I'm being paid well, or when I go home and everything is fine. But now when the pressure is on, this is even more tricky.
Well, the poor are going to find it hard, but so are the rich, because they're pay packets, their businesses are going to be hit, but they still have such a high level of living to keep up if they're going to stay at that level. So it really is going to be hugely challenging. But nevertheless, I still think the prevailing Christian message and Christian attitude has to be one not of me first. I think here in the South African or African context, the whole concept of Ubuntu is a marvelous tradition to put into Christian action. I am for you, and I think that's, if we can capture that from a contextualized point of view, I think, yeah, what an opportunity for the Christian Church and for society in general to manifest itself in the face of an intimidating virus.
So let's try and wrap this up in terms of just a few pointers that we can give to the listeners. And the one that I heard from you is that this is an opportunity to serve even more. And let's say this thing goes to its worst possible conclusion, which is a nationwide global pandemic, and people are affected, and we lose loved ones. Then what are some of the resources that you've seen the church and the Christian faith provide the person who is in the midst of this tremendous suffering?
Sure. Well, first of all, there's the general spiritual and psychological pastoral care that we're talking about, the fear, already before we're even affected, the fear. And I think the challenge there is for Christians to show compassion, understanding that there should be that fear, but also challenging perhaps the roots of that fear. And that in itself goes back to, the whole fear of dying, quite frankly. The whole fear of death, and why that is there. Because, the reality of life is every one of us is going to die of something at some stage. And also, none of us is guaranteed to have, the good life. So coming to terms with dying can be a very helpful thing, actually, for communities to begin to talk about dying together. I was in a conference last year, and one of the keynote speakers was a palliative care specialist. She's been 47 years in palliative care, Catherine Mannix. And her passion in life, her mission in life now, is to get people talking about dying. To take away the fear, to take away the dread, if you like, of fear. Now, as Christians, of all people, we should be able to do that, because we belong to a Savior who has taken away the certainly the demonic dynamic to that thing. And but also, I think we can provide a very practical and humanitarian aspect.
So, Roger, basically what you're saying is that we need to embrace death, talk about that, because maybe we are so used to just living in comfort, we're so used to surrounding ourselves with things, that we are almost distracting ourselves from this inevitable thing. And when a virus like this approaches, then we are reminded of our mortality and how frail we actually are. And it'll actually be a shame if Christians are completely shocked by this, because this is something that we should talk about more. Because if you think about it, the thing that is held up in church every day, every Sunday, is a crucified Jesus.
Exactly.
Death is something that we are supposed to be reminded of on a very regular basis. I actually read a while ago that Catholics tend to deal with death better than Protestants, because they are always focusing on the crucified Jesus, whilst Protestants, in as much as they are focusing on an image, that's not something that we like to do. We're also always focusing on the resurrected Jesus. And I mean, we need both, but perhaps one of the reasons why we struggle with suffering is because we skipped a very important bit, and that is the terrible cross.
I think that's absolutely right. Others, of course, would draw attention to Easter Saturday, and Christ's descent into hell, and a lot of trauma work actually is focusing really on that particular dynamic, which I think is a very interesting one. I think the other element to what Christians can contribute at this time is, of course, practical help, because there's going to be a lot of people who are in who are in lockdown, as it were, particularly the elderly and the infirm. And it's a wonderful opportunity for the Christian Church to demonstrate its connection with community and to be prepared to buy and to provide and supply for those who are shut in and isolated at this time. And again, it's getting over this me first sort of attitude, which is so dominating in our modern society.
Absolutely. Roger, I think that's enough. Maybe, I'm not sure if you have anything to add in terms of a trauma counselor with a lot of experience in this. But what I heard from you is, one, we should defer, we should not be selfish in a time where people are telling us to look out for ourselves. We should fight that in a responsible way. The other thing is that we should not be afraid of death. We should talk about it. We should think about it. And then more than that, not just death in terms of if it comes to us, more than that, we need to sort of go to places that might be scary, that might be traumatic, and we should allow that. We should allow ourselves into that space.
Yeah.
And these are at least three things, that's what I'm picking up from you, in which we could fight, we can really fight this this coronavirus.
Absolutely. And glory be to God if we do.
Yeah. And I mean, the point is, I mean, maybe one thing that we can close on is the fact that the church, the world, has gone through much bigger catastrophes. I mean, let's even go on a worst case scenario. The world has gone through some sure. pretty bad things, and this is an opportunity for people of faith to show some good character in this. I mean, if you just think historically of a Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you know, in Nazi Germany, or Mother Teresa in Calcutta, India, or Martin Luther King, or whatever. And this is not to have delusions of grandeur to try and stand up and take the stage, but in terms of showing good character when the chips are down, a William Wilberforce comes to mind as well. So maybe this is a great opportunity for our faith to really take action.
Indeed. Yes, we're not talking about heroism. We're talking about being real to our Christian convictions.
Yeah.
Pure and simple.
Well, let's end on that note. Roger, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, my pleasure.